Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, it's time for another late night Loki. Episode 2 just dropped. We just watched it, and it's time to chat about it a little bit. All that right after this ad we have no control over. Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll, and we have two guest hosts with us tonight. We've got Brian V. Klein, who joined us last week for Late Night Loki, and Jay Scotty St. Clair. How you guys doing tonight?
Fantastic.
Doing excellent. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, man. I'm super glad you could hop in, Jay Scotty. BVK was planned to be here, but Jeff kind of had a last minute, he didn't feel well and he couldn't make it. So thanks for hopping in.
I won't say that I'm the superior Jeff, but
but you did make it, so you know.
Yeah, we're not calling you Jeff now.
That's what the J stands for. My mind is breaking. It's a whole.
If only
this is a different. J Scotty is a variant version of Jeff.
That explains so much now. Oh my god!
Back to the future, man. This is crazy.
We gotta reevaluate our whole friendship now.
Okay, let's get right into it, guys. We like to do these late night Lokis quick. So, what did you guys think of Loki episode 2?
Fantastic! It was. It started off so much where I mean I was laughing so hard, especially the scene at the beginning with him and Miss Minutes, and then by the end I was just like jaw on the ground, just like that's how great this show is. It hits you everywhere and just so much to unpack in this episode.
Yeah, for sure. There really, like, I couldn't, the thing that keeps coming back to me, I just rewatched the first episode before we watched this one, and like and this episode as well, and like it's just so packed with good lines. And like I think about what happened when I think of the episodes, I'm trying to like talk about what all happened, what was the arc of the episode. And there's a lot of little things that happened, but like every line is gold. Every single line between the two of them. They're like constantly kind of bickering at each other and picking on each other and saying like really thoughtful and really insightful things. Like I want to go and watch. I just want to watch every episode so closely because there's just so much gold in there.
Green and gold.
True. True.
Yeah. I mean, just the back and forth between Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston is just, it's ridiculous how good it is. And even in this episode, they just keep adding on to it. And you see these new layers of their working relationship getting unraveled. And it's so good. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can only echo similar sentiments there, but you talk about the opening with Miss Minutes and the humor there, but I got to rewind a little bit to that opening scene with like the Ren Fair and just like how the series is able to balance between that humor, but then also the suspense and the action and what's going on with this other version of Loki is just really raw and great stuff. I'm really impressed with the way the series is moving along so quickly. It's great pacing.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people compare this, the sort of like promotional materials and stuff of this, to Doctor Who. And that balance of humor and sort of terror and adventure is something that Doctor Who does really well. And this episode particularly reminded me a ton of Doctor Who. When the little doors, when you see all these charges start to be set all around the room, and then those little doors open up under them and drop them to various places. I guess various places on the timeline.
Yeah, they showed the scene inside the TVA with the monitor, and it was showing pretty much a lot of the events they already went to. You saw Pompeii, and you saw all these, basically almost the apocalyptic events, which I'm assuming he's resetting for them to not happen or to change. I mean, we don't know, but I saw on the screen, I saw Pompeii definitely.
Okay. I think it's safe to assume they're Nexus events because those are the things that like basically create this multiverse of madness that we seem to be thrust headlong into at the end of this episode.
Right. Because that timeline just splintered out, branched out like, holy crap.
Yeah, and one of the agents said, someone just bombed the sacred timeline.
Yep.
Right.
And you just seeing all these branches forming at one time. Clearly, it seems out of the scope of what the TVA is used to. And it just reminded me so much. It's amazing that they were able to set up this world in one episode where we feel like we have some grasp of how the TVA works and sort of like what is an average day for them, that right. we know when this happens at the end that this seems like a shocking, crazy thing that's going on, that like it just was really well done, really, for such a strange environment to already have like a good, for us to already have a grasp of what a good set point for them is, like what kind of their normal is, and then be able to blow it out of the water, where we're like, oh my gosh, like I am blown away that the sacred timeline's been bombed. What? And I'm like, wait, like I didn't know what the sacred timeline was last week. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. And suddenly I'm shocked that the sacred timeline's being blown up. Like, it's really got me invested.
And the one question I still had from the first episode, which was sort of like, how easy is it to access something that will allow you to distort or disrupt the timeline? Because that kid that was the, you know, the son of the Goldman Sachs guy, like, how did he get something to be able to go back in time and mess with it? It's like, is it that prevalent out there that they have to have all these things? And then all of a sudden now it's just like, for them, it's probably like a regular day where it's the office. The next thing you know, all of a sudden it gets bombed and they're going, we don't know how to handle this. Holy crap. Because they're pretty much, you know, just pencil pushers in a lot of ways. And they use this episode and to show you all the different levels of the people that are there, especially when they're in that library and you see the lady who's pretty much like, no, this is classified. This is classified. Mm-hmm. Like, here, this is all you get to see. And it's, you know, his file.
Give me files in the beginning of the universe. Classified. Yeah.
On the give me everything universe. You got in the timekeepers. Like, yeah, you're going to have that readily available.
Yeah. I can't wait. I want it so bad, though. Come on. Tell me who the timekeepers are. Who are they? What are the space lizards? I want to know everything.
But the one revelation we got in this episode is that the perfect event in the history of time is jet skis.
Yes.
I mean, in the early 90s, one point has happened where it was everything came to play, and it's freaking jet skis. I mean, jet skis are fun, don't get me wrong, but it's like, okay.
You know? I really wanted Loki to say, when he was having the conversation a little later about chaos, and he's talking about the perfect, we will end time in perfect peace with the timekeepers. He said, Mobius says that. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, that sounds boring. And I really wanted to be like, it doesn't sound like a place for jet skis. Right? Like you, cause it doesn't, like a little bit of chaos is what makes life like interesting and fun. And like, I kind of want him to call Mobius out and be like, doesn't sound like a place for jet skis, right? Like the place of perfect peace and harmony. No, you want to like, you want the apex of what you're fighting for. You don't want to end with like just giving time over to these timekeepers.
Oh, exactly.
I like it. It was a missed opportunity for a callback.
I'm sure we'll hear about jet skis again. They can't drop that and just be like, oh, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could see that. I could also just see it like being like an ongoing thing there. We just see like future episodes where there's jet skis in the background in his office or something.
Or just like the magazines. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, talking about the interplay between like Loki and Mobius and just what a great job Owen Wilson's doing. Another thing that impresses me about the show, just two episodes in, is we've gotten jokes, in both episodes that appear in the trailer that were really funny in the trailer, but they still managed to land when we see them in the episode, because they do little things like they omitted like Loki's little one-line reactions. Like, I can't remember specifically what he said afterwards, but it was like, I've seen you stab people in the back like 50 times. Yeah, but I'd never do it again.
Yeah.
Because it get boring, yeah, because he was talking about the context of it's...
Right.
It's routine at this point.
Yeah, it's a routine way of killing. It's like that's a pedestrian way of killing, of betraying someone.
Right. And then I think back on episode one when he just had, you know, sign this saying, this is everything you've ever said.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, sign this too. And then there was one more on top of that, and just that extra little joke was enough to get an audible laugh out of me, so.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Anything that can get a real audible laugh, like, in actuality, is pretty rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't know. What else are we missing? I feel like there's probably other large things we're missing, and I know this is Late Night Loki, where we're all punchy, and we're just trying to, like, throw out ideas and throw out things that we liked, but...
Well, I will say that we're talking about the humor aspect. I personally thought that when he called him Professor Loki at the beginning was sort of used as a derogatory term because of, I just automatically went to the Star Wars reference when Han Solo calls 3PO. Well, the professor says, and he uses it as like, oh, he thinks he's smarter than us, which in actuality he is, but Loki probably listens, hears that, and is like, okay, yeah, I'm teaching you guys things. But it's also, you know, who knows? Just like I said, the interplay between them, especially when he was trying, when Loki was explaining the whole event with his salad.
And yes, he's that was
peppering
great.
It and salting, and Owen Wilson's like, that's my lunch. That's not a metaphor. And then he goes and sees Pillboy or Casey, and he grabs his juice box because he's out of his drink, and he's just sitting there knowingly ruining his lunch to try to make a point, which he could have made it a different way, but it's just like, he's still poking at him.
Yeah, and yeah. Pillboy's like, you again? Yeah. That's so good.
I don't think I could ever call him Casey, though. That's just Pillboy.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to break that.
I feel like we'd be bearing the lead if we didn't mention the fact that they, you know, they didn't waste any time. We knew this variant was out there, but we get the reveal that's Lady Loki.
Right. Truth.
We get the hood pulled down. Yeah. Truth. We get to see Lady Loki in all her sassy glory.
I was very expecting it, so I wasn't shocked, but like, yeah, it was very sassy and fun, and like, I thought about that, this Loki, introducing this new Loki. So, you know, we've got the Hawkeye series coming soon, where they are introducing a new Hawkeye to take over, who, and I'm assuming the old Hawkeye might leave the franchise, or like, maybe Renner won't be in it as much, or whatever. Or he'll die.
Yeah, he wanted to go back to his family on the farm, now that he got him back anyway after Endgame. So.
A new Hawkeye has been introduced. I didn't thought of it until now, but if this Loki is introduced, if we get a Loki that we end up actually kind of liking by the end of the story, because this Loki, she even says, don't call me that. Like, don't use that name. I like, kind of like she's far beyond that or something. I really want to know like what that means and who is this Loki. And I kind of was thinking like, what if Tom Hiddleston's Loki does end up leaving before this series is over? And this is a new Loki introduced in the universe. Still don't know what we're getting with the female Thor coming in Love and Thunder. We're getting a female Hawkeye. We're getting like, and now we've got a female Loki on the board. Like, we've got a lot of different gender flipped roles coming. Maybe it's like doing the same gimmick too many times, but I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
And like Emily says here, Hiddleston has mentioned that he wants to keep playing it. And with the way that they're bringing him back into this with the whole, you know, if you help us with this mission, who's to say that he can't blend right back into the timeline? I mean, right. I could see him coming back and say, even like Love and Thunder or something, and Thor being like, wait, who the hell are you? You're dead. I've warned you already. Stay away, I guess. But an actor of his caliber, you definitely, you know, if you can keep him on, I'd say you got to keep him on.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, as much as Lady Loki is a thing in the comics, or from the comics, obviously, correct me if I'm wrong here, like, they've been planting the seeds for Young Avengers, and Young Loki is a thing in the comics as well. That's been pretty prominent in the last few years here anyway. So I just kind of think back to that scene where Mobius pulled up all those crazy different versions of Loki, mm-hmm. where you even got to see like a hulked out version of Loki. So it's all out there. Yeah. And then, yeah, Emily, is letting me know that I am correct. It feels kind of self-gratifying.
Yeah. To- yeah. Yeah.
Funny. That reminds me after our big argument with me and Jeff last week, I was collating the feedback and putting it all in order and stuff. And I was like having to like struggle to like fight, just putting all the people that agreed with me at the top, you know, like,
and then he's going through the list like, nope, 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 nope. Another thing before we go that I want to bring up is the timekeepers thing. And are they real, or are they actually just a, I'm getting sort of, if anyone out there has seen the show Snowpiercer in the first season, Mr. Wilford, who's the guy that pretty much runs the whole thing. He's not, they think he's dead. So Melanie, who's the main person on the show, is basically saying, well, Mr. Wilford says this, Mr. Wilford says that, when in actuality, she's doing it herself.
Right.
So the judge, is she supposed to be relaying the thoughts of the timekeepers? Are they real? Are they not? I mean, we don't know yet.
I think I said it on the first episode, don't pay attention to the space lizards behind the curtain. Like, this could very much be a Wizard of Oz situation where you're like, ooh, it's the big Oz, this is the timekeepers, but actually it's somebody in the TVA is just running the show and like controlling the levers of power and the way they want. It could be this lady from the court. What's her name?
Renslayer.
Renslayer. Interesting.
Yeah.
Or it could be someone else. Or it could be, you saying all that made me think of like an AI. Because
That's true.
You also have this episode, he talks to Ms. Minutes. Mm-hmm. What if the TVA is actually being kind of controlled by Ms. Minutes? Or like not necessarily Ms. Minutes, but like some AI like Ms. Minutes, because he asks her, are you alive or are you just showing me videos? And she's like, kind of both, and like yeah. dances around. It made me think there's something more to Ms. Minutes than meets the eye, possibly. So like, maybe it's not actually Ms. Minutes, but like it could be an AI like. They're kind of introducing the idea that there are these AIs among the TVA.
Interesting.
Right. TJ Stafford says it's Casey.
Ooh,
Jimmy, or Pillboy, sorry.
Jimmy T3 on Twitch says, Return of Ultron confirmed. What a crazy thing would it be if this was Ultron leading back to his own existence by creating a society in this little pocket universe. Ooh.
Now, let me ask you guys this, and I think I may have misunderstood. At the end, when they're at Roxcart, and they run into the agent that was abducted from the Ren Faire, and she's saying,
C-20. Yeah.
I led them to them. I led him to her, or to them, mm-hmm. who, the right. timekeepers. I'm thinking, how would she know, unless she's just talking about the TVA, how would she know where the timekeepers are, because it seems like no one does. Unless that's just a
great question, you know,
it's just that she's led Loki to the TVA or something, which obviously they know about because she's getting the information. Which, by the way, when what was the B-15 when she was walking with Loki, and all of a sudden she's like, "So you're the one they sent to find me?" I'm thinking, "Oh crap, it was her all along." But then you realize that she can just project her. You know, I didn't realize that. I thought when she did that to the first agent at the Ren Faire, that it was just right. a possession thing, not a control thing. Because right. they show her in the control booth, so it's like, wait a second. I'm thinking, like, that body type wasn't the same style we saw in the cloak, but then when she got dropped down, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm like, that would have been interesting if it was her all along when she was in the TVA, and they wouldn't have been able to detect that.
For sure. That would have been interesting. But the magic doesn't work there, though, supposedly.
That's true.
Okay. So yeah, that's all wild. My only thought on that, the idea that she told them where the space lizards are, is like, maybe there are certain moments in the timeline that the timekeepers are particularly protective of because they're leading towards. See, I think they're leading towards whatever future allows the timekeepers to exist. That's my theory all along.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like, the timekeepers are future people of some sort, space lizards, whatever, that, like, they have to protect their timeline because it is the thing that allows them to exist, because eventually it will allow them to exist. And so if a bunch of changes happen to the timeline and their timeline gets destroyed, they don't exist anymore. That's been kind of my thinking on it anyway. Like, it's like any society that wins the battle is going to keep the land where it's supporting them, you know, like keep this sort of like land that they won, this universe, the multiverse,
yeah.
and like keep it contributing to their society, if that makes sense.
It has sort of a feel, going back to the whole Doctor Who thing, where they've got the fixed points in time.
Yeah.
Where no matter what you do, you can't go back there and affect that, because it's always going to correct itself, because it's something that has to happen.
Right. And it makes me wonder if that's the timekeepers. The timekeepers are the force that's making that happen, making these things stay the way they are. And maybe this agent knows kind of these fixed points in time, and maybe like that's why female Loki stole one of the timekeepers, because she needed to know like where to send all those bombs. And then like all those bombs went through those little doors into all these different parts of space time, and blew up all these weak points or strong points in the timeline that made it fork like crazy.
Nexus events, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Nexus events or whatever.
Who knows?
I kind of want to bring up the fact that there's a little bit of a parallel through line between this series, just in the first two episodes here, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, in terms of like the Flag Smashers being these people that were displaced. It's almost like the variants are displaced in their own way, and I can see the female Loki kind of being that, like, I have a right to exist. Like, who are the timekeepers to establish this sacred timeline and divide the resources, you know?
Well, 100%. When they show in the first episode, there's a war, right? Like, there's this war among timelines, and this timeline won, and now it is using all of its power that it has gathered to suppress all other timelines. And it reminded me of things like the Flag Smashers, but also just, like, every other oppressed people in history.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
You know, once someone wins the war and then they start oppressing people that are, that they've defeated, you know, then that's just kind of how war works. And like, so the idea that someone would want to break out of that and like break free makes a lot of sense.
Hmm. It seems like they do have quite a bit, because I also saw another parallel, but this one to WandaVision, when Loki and Mobius were talking, and Mobius says, well, that was an oversimplification of it, and I was expecting him to just go right to the same speech that Agent Wu did, where they use that oversimplification of events type thing, where it's like they must have had writers for all the shows like comparing notes, because there seems to be a lot of callbacks, even how subtle they are, to the previous shows and that we've just recently seen. So
I see that.
Least I see that. So it's
So just throwing out some things from the chat. Mikel Ice says much more exciting than the series premiere. What do you guys think? It was more or less exciting?
I think excitement level was there. It's, I mean, they were both interested. The first one, I did the same as you. I rewatched it right before, like earlier today. And it doesn't have the excitement level, but there's so much on there as far as just the world building and seeing Loki seeing his past, which is more heart-wrenching than excitement. But yeah, you could have stuff that doesn't have the excitement level, but it doesn't mean it's not interesting and captivating as well. So, but yeah, this one definitely had those fight scenes in the Rocksmart or Rocks Cart were pretty intense.
Yeah, I agree. I think this one definitely had more action than the first one, but like that first one, for me, all that world building is so exciting. Like I get
it was
really
such
into
a strong
it.
Debut.
I got really into that initial episode.
And they definitely had a lot more uses of vacuum cleaners as weapons in this one. Using the Roomba thing and then using the hosed one is like, it was like, use your, what do you have at your disposal?
Yeah, he's in the vacuum department. He had to use what he had, you know?
I know MODOK is technically Marvel adjacent, but yeah, between this and MODOK.
The Roombas? Yeah.
Yeah, 2021 is the year of Roomba for Marvel.
I can only assume in the future too that this is Rock's Cart, that it's a Roxxon corporation,
they're
Walmart, so they took over the world a little more, and you know, Roxxon domination confirmed maybe, but it's going to get destroyed. So
well, it's also like all over the place. Roxxon has been all over so many different of the Marvel properties, especially the sort of third party ones. It's kind of just kind of cool. Let's see. Jimmy T3 says, my one bit of instant research is that he was working on level 372 because Thor number 372 was the first appearance of the TVA in the comics.
Interesting.
That's rad. I like that. Emily says, they are both giving Emmy-level performances, and I'm so sad this series is too late for this year's awards and will have to wait until next year. Yeah, I totally agree.
You know what, though? I disagree with that, because I think I forgot. Oh, no, you know what? No, that's right. June 1st is the cutoff for this past season, as far as the applications for Emmy consideration. So the first two series will, so this one could be going for next year, then.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out. I guess that's going to be about it for Late Night Loki. You guys got any last thoughts?
I'll bring on next week, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is so much like a movie, and I just want it to. I want to see all 6 hours right away. This has just been so good.
Yeah, I guess for my final thoughts, I'll just give a shout out to. Now I just lost her name. Natalie Holt is doing the music, and she's just absolutely killing it.
Yeah. The music's been awesome.
It feels like the tragic themes from the first two movies, the very Shakespearean and of that era that. Excuse me, like medieval Norse era, but then it also kind of meets that Mark's Motherbaugh electronic score that we got introduced to in Ragnarok, and it's kind of a perfect marriage there, so I'm really digging it.
Yeah, it definitely sets the tone, especially that theremin.
Mm-hmm.
Good call.
Yeah, anytime you can incorporate theremin in something, it's perfect. I like it.
That's real fun.
And you don't overuse it, so.
Agreed.
Good times.
It's cool. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. You guys got anything you want to plug real quick?
Animation Deliberation, wherever you find your podcast, check us out at Animation Deliberation. We're working with the Star Wars Universe podcast to do coverage of Bad Batch, and then we also just resumed our coverage of Young Justice, so check us out there, leave us some reviews, join the conversation.
Yeah. Great podcast.
And I got the first episode of Source Pages should be dropping with before the next time we're watching Loki.
Ooh.
We're covering the Black Widow Deadly Origins, myself and Haley Hobbs, and we got Jeff Randall jumping in on it. So
nice.
The first one will be dropping soon, and then we'll go from there.
Dude, that's great. That's really, really great. And yeah. we'll probably, if you're cool with it, we might throw that in the MCU cast feed and let people know. That podcast is existing, or maybe half the episode or something. Make them go get the full episode at the source.
Give them a teaser.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. We are the Marvel Cinematic Universe Podcast. Have a great day. Peace. Who wants it?
Next time, true believers.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Marvel Cinematic Universe Podcast. Available everywhere you get podcasts, and now a video version streaming live on twitch.tv/strandedpandatv and available at youtube.com/strandedpanda. And if you'd like to learn more about all of our other podcasts, geeky projects, and ways to support the network, visit strandedpanda.com.